Hello, and welcome to the Reach or Miss Show, the podcast for the customer-focused entrepreneur, where Hayut Yogev speaks with entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs about reaching or missing the critical point of approaching the right customer with the right message at the right time and place, the point where business success starts. And here is your host, Hayut Yogev.
Episode 25. Alex Baker joined Relay Ventures in 2008, bringing a consulting background specialized in financial services. Prior to his experiences at Bearing Point and PwC Consulting, Alex studied at the Schulich School of Business at York University. With Relay Ventures, he works with mobile-focused software and hardware entrepreneurs across a variety of industries. He is also an active part of the venture capital community in Canada and abroad as a Kaufman Fellow, as well as an advisor and a frequent speaker and panelist. Alex Baker, it's so great to have you here. Hi.
Hi, Hayut. Nice to be here.
It is great to have you here, and I'm so happy you were able to talk with us. I just shared with our listeners what you've done until now, and I would like you to share with us what are you doing and most passionate about today, and where are you heading?
So as you know, Relay Ventures is a mobile-focused fund. For us, that definition has really transitioned over time. The first fund, which was 2008, was a $150 million fund. We've raised four funds in total, all being around the same amount and all being in U.S. dollars. And today, our focus of mobile is really, we define it as everything from the cloud to the sensor. So today's passion, I would say, really is around what's happening in the sensor and what mobile is redefining itself on edge computing.
But I guess when you say mobile, you don't refer only for the phones anymore. Is that true?
That's exactly right. So when we talk about the sensors and we talk about edge computing, we're talking about devices that sit outside of the phone on its own. And so the phone can either be a conduit for gathering, collecting, and processing information and sending it to the cloud, or storing it itself or processing itself. Or the phone could be the application that collects and where you view the information from the sensor. And so we have a number of investments that are predicated or whose thesis is around what we would call, you know, these little edge computers, from the home to the car, to the person and the individual, around the consumerization of health, around the Internet of Things inside of the home, and inside of the car and things of that nature.
Are you into the huge, hectic industry of the car, of the autonomous car, everything that has to do with sensors for the car as well?
So we are looking today at autonomous vehicle investing. We have nothing in the portfolio specifically around that, but around the car itself, we have a company called Mojio, which essentially creates an electronic relationship between the vehicle itself and the device. And so with Mojio, I can see where my car is. I can look at what each of the error codes that pop up mean, because most consumers have absolutely no idea what error codes in their cars mean. I could look at the driving history of the car. I could keep track of when my last oil change was and when it's coming up. It automatically notifies me of those situations. And it also has Wi-Fi built in, so that you know, my kids can sit on YouTube all day long in the car without having to use my device.
Wow. And where are you heading? Where are you? What are you planning for the years to come?
Well, so we continue, like I said, we continue to look at investments in what I would call, you know, these edge computers. We are very interested these days in healthcare and the consumerization of healthcare, with a number of investments in that space that would, you know, either use the camera on the phone to analyze wounds and analyze cuts, we have a lot of interest in the future of education and how mobile is intercepting a lot of what's happening inside of the classroom. We have a lot of interest in, you know, financial services and the disruption that's going on there and a number of investments that we've played in there. And, you know, recently, we've also had a huge focus on the family and the way that mobile phones are changing the dynamics of family. Because what's happened today is the cost has come down so dramatically on owning a phone. And many, many, many families, particularly in North America, are buying phones for, you know, their 10, 11, 12 year old. And so there's, right, so there's there each, you know, the average family's got, I think, 4+ connected devices, and kids are frankly abusing their time on the internet. So, you know, we did one investment in the family in a company called Circle, which is based in Portland. And Circle sits in front of your router and essentially helps you manage the amount of time and the access rights that your kids have to specific websites. So, for example, my 4-year-old has a profile where, you know, she can only look at specific websites. She can't access any social networks from the device that's allocated to her. And she only has a specific amount of time that she's allowed on the device itself. Whereas my 11-year-old has a very different profile. And so he can spend 15 or 20 minutes on Snapchat if he wants. He can spend 15 or 20 minutes on Instagram if he wants. And he can spend, you know, a half hour to an hour on YouTube every day. But then he is also restricted from other websites. And this comes, you know, out of the box. I can set him up as a teenager, although he's not quite there yet. I can set my 4-year-old up as a child, and I can set my 8-year-old up with her profile as well. And that's an investment we did, 5 months ago. That company, has massive distribution inside of every big box store in North America. You can also buy the device on Amazon. Or get it through their website directly. And then there was another deal that we closed with an Atlanta-based company in May as well. The company is called Greenlight. It's a financial services company. It's a debit card for families. And it also allows you, again, when you look at the age that kids are starting to get phones and have independence and go out to the shopping mall on their own with friends, it really is around the same age, 11, 12 years old. And this is a really nice pairing for a mobile phone because it allows a parent to instantaneously send funds to their kids. They can restrict where they want those funds to be used. So if I only want my son or daughter to buy a hamburger from McDonald's at a specific location, I can restrict where they spend it based on time of day and based on location. And then when they're done for the day, I can either take the change back, which is a novel idea for parents, or I can have them put it into a savings account and teach them about savings. And that company, like I said, we did that deal it was a seed deal. We did that deal in May. And that company has, to date, over 25,000 cards in market.
Wow. How long have you been at the company?
I came at the beginning in 2008. In fact, I started in the venture capital business in 2007. We created this fund in 2008. And as the story goes, we sort of spun it out. It was a co-managed fund, and we spun it out and created Relay Ventures, and then went on to raise our next funds.
That's great. And do you see any differentiation with Relay Ventures compared to other ventures out there?
Certainly. I mean, you know, at the beginning, we actually called ourselves a BlackBerry Partners Fund. So that was the history behind the fund, was that BlackBerry was an investor in the first fund. They represented just a portion of the capital that was invested. And we, at that time, built a portfolio off of the brand. And as mobile became more ubiquitous, different devices got introduced into the market and the market expanded, we started to create a brand, Relay Ventures, off of our portfolio. So the differentiation we have is really around our CEOs and the 60+ portfolio companies that we've invested in that are either still operating today or that have gone on to be acquired by the likes of Google and Facebook, and AOL and Yahoo and, you know, the very large brands that exist in the market as well. And so the differentiation really comes from that network, which we've worked hard to maintain. We've worked hard to grow, a great portfolio full of entrepreneurs that share ideas with each other. I just came back from California. We had 15 of our CEOs with a round table and, you know, three executives who came from outside of the portfolio to, you know, teach about growth, teach about novel sales ideas, teach about marketing ideas, and then we try to do that every quarter. So, you know, I think that's one thing that differentiates us. We also have, you know, a network of advisors that we think very highly of, who help influence our decisions, bring us, you know, new ideas, help us understand what it's going to take to either sell an application or a device through a channel or inside of an organization. They come from all around North America. They're independent. We don't pay them, but they are there just basically for the love of venture. And, you know, I think so those three things, building the portfolio, the network of advisors that we bring in, and these, you know, additional resources that we bring in, all help differentiate us. But at the end of the day, this is really about the reputation that we've built from the investments that we've made.
Sure. It might be strange to ask that venture capital, but I think I like this question. Who do you see as your customers today?
Oh, that's a very interesting question. So it's almost a little bit like how do we market ourselves? And, you know, we have two sets of customers, I think. You know, one set of customers are our investors, because at the end of the day, they're the ones who invest, they pay money. At the end of the day, they're the ones who fund the portfolio. So they certainly are our customer. But I actually I consider every single one of our portfolio customers to be our customers as well. And our portfolio companies are our customers because, you know, I don't want to say we service them, because we provide them with a whole lot more than capital. But at the end of the day, we need to make sure that they've got the resources to make themselves successful. The same way as the relationship between a business and a customer, which is to make sure that that customer has the resources to make themselves successful. Whether you're buying a hamburger and it's nourishing you, or whether you're buying a service from an agency and they're helping you, or whether you're buying into a venture capital fund and they're returning dollars, all of those things, the customer always needs to feel like they're getting value from the service that they're providing. And we like to feel like we're providing value back to our portfolio companies.
I love this way of looking at your customers or at your portfolio companies, because sometimes I think they feel like somebody owns them. And so it's great to hear that you see them as your customers as well.
Geez, I would hate to have that relationship with our CEOs. I think it's some people say it's like a marriage. I actually don't think it's like a marriage, because in a marriage, you know, you can actually get divorced and never talk to the spouse again. But I actually think it's more like being, you know, a sibling, because with siblings, you know, I grew up with two brothers. With siblings, you could punch them in the face one day, although we never had fights like that. And then the next day, you hug each other. And I think that that, you know, having the relationship, being on the board, being an investor with the company is a lot like being a sibling, where, you know, you're on the field of battle together. And one day things might not go so well, but you need to know that that when you leave that field of battle, that you know, people have personalities and feelings, and that you know, they need to understand that that there's a time and a place for the discussions that you've had.
This show actually is all about customers' approach and customer focus, and I wanted to ask you, what is your best advice to our listeners? I would like you to tell us about your concept or beliefs about the way a startup or your portfolio companies should approach its customers, and give our listeners your best advice for their customers' approach and focus.
Well, the companies that we have in our portfolio that have been most successful from a sales and marketing and financing perspective have all, and I think this is true in operations too, by the way. So you look at all aspects of running a business, and the companies in our portfolio that have been most successful have been ones that are constantly testing. And so they're always doing, you know, A/B testing of or multiple, it's not just two variables, but, you know, multivariable testing on anything that you can think of. It's very obvious in marketing today. You know, everyone understands that you need to do A/B testing. A lot of people subscribe to Mixpanel and other services that allow you to, you know, target specific segments with different offers and see what challengers are the best challengers, and you know, move them up in the rankings. And it's very obvious from a sales perspective that you need to test different pricing and different tactics. But, you know, the way that you execute against it and constantly be testing and never, never, ever, ever think that if you have pricing that that you're going to market with, that other pricing models shouldn't be tested, or whether your marketing campaigns are working for top of funnel leads, that other things shouldn't be continuously tested, and that you shouldn't be thinking 9 or 12 or 15 months into the future of what you needed to do. That's absolutely essential. But I think that same thing, by the way, is true for financing. And that one piece of advice that I give to our portfolio companies that are, you know, pitching their Series A or their B or their C or their D is really to go out, understand who you're talking to, obviously. So know your customer, which are venture capital funds. And based on the size of the fund and based on the size of check that they generally write, the portfolio company needs to test out different financing strategies. So if they are talking to a fund that can write a $20 million check or a $25 million check, then they need to have a vision and they need to have a pitch deck, and they need to have a product path and a go-to-market strategy that gets them to, you know, somewhere between $20 and $30 million of financing. And in theory, that same portfolio company could be talking to a fund that writes checks for $10 to $15 million. And the funding for or the path for a company that's looking for $10 to $20 million and the goals and that and the expectations are far different than a $30 to $40 million strategy, but they could very well be pitching those two funds at the same time for the same at the same stage that the fund is at. So again, I would advocate that you need to test the different fund sizes and different types of funds. And the same thing goes for operations and continuously improving operations, because it's all about building momentum and understanding that where the momentum is coming from. And momentum only comes when you test different ideas.
I don't know if it's a fair question, but you will decide. How well do you think your portfolio companies as a whole, but how well do you think they know their customers?
Well, that really varies. I could tell you that for sure. Some companies know their customers exceptionally well. Some companies are in the marketing automation space. They need to know their customers exceptionally well because they, you know, have hand-to-hand combat with them. They are helping them succeed in their marketing campaigns, so they understand them exceptionally well. Some companies were born out of solving a problem for specific industries. So in the restaurant point of sale space, as an example, they know their customers exceptionally well. Another company that does scheduling for restaurants, because it's a specific vertical, they know their customers exceptionally well. They know what communities those customers go to find information. They understand what their issues are inside of their restaurants or inside of their organizations. They know them exceptionally well. I would say, though, for, you know, large, massive, very disruptive ideas that are introducing new hardware, in some cases, into a market, it is extremely difficult to navigate who you're selling the customer to, who you're selling the product to, and who your customer is. And you need to spend a lot of money testing those ideas. And this doesn't answer the question that you have specifically, but I will say this, that what we
do find, I think it did. I must say.
What we do find, though, when companies are in the hardware space and they're trying to develop a sensor-based solution that requires them to build the hardware and to build the firmware and to build the connectivity to a mobile phone or to the network, we find there that there's just an overwhelming amount of money that's spent on R&D that they don't have nearly as much money to figure out who their customer is. And that, you're right, that path is a lot harder to navigate than it is when you have a very vertically focused software solution.
Definitely. I do agree with you on that. I know, and I'm sure you've got a lot of successes. However, I want now to ask you, what is your biggest, most critical failure with customers? the one that affected your journey the most from your own perspective?
Oh, but Khayyoud, no venture capitalists like to talk about their failures. They only like to talk about their successes. I'm happy to share a few, and I'm quite candid with our portfolio companies and with companies that we are in the midst of doing due diligence on or prospecting about the challenges in the industry and the challenges with taking on venture financing and how we like to operate, and I like to be transparent with our portfolio companies, so I'll try to do the same for you without giving out any specifics. But I'll tell you that the failures that usually come up in general are around timing of the market. So I have a partner who says, we've never missed an opportunity, really, in a category. We've just timed the market completely wrong. And I will tell you that, so the failure around market timing is really that companies overspend when they get their first round, second round, third round of financing. So there is this immediate reflex or gut reaction when a company raises money to go out and hire people and hire them at a pace that they are not, A, they are not conditioned for, and B, that the organization is not conditioned to accept. And so generally what happens generally is I honestly feel that there is not one company that I've ever been on the board on that doesn't wish they didn't have an extra 3 months of capital. In other words, they overspend about 25%. And they end up hitting a roadblock because there's some instability that happens once you raise money. And I feel confident that this has happened to me a number of times. And I consider it a failure when the company doesn't exit for what you expect it to exit for, or, the company has to turn around and do a mass layoff, which many companies, not just in our portfolio, but broadly speaking, have to do, where they, where they trim their sales force by upwards of 10%. And we try to navigate that properly so it actually doesn't happen. But again, I think that this is more around advice around our failures, which is just, don't spend too quickly. Don't have that reflex that because someone, a venture fund, believes in you, believes in what you're pitching to them, believes in you enough to go and write a check for $5 million or $8 million or even $2 million, that you need to go out and hire 5 bodies or 10 bodies or 25 bodies. Hire the right bodies at the right time. Stretch people as far as you can take them. They will become better leaders for it, and they will become more productive workers for it. Don't overwork them, but definitely stretch their brains.
You say you look at your portfolio companies as your customers. Do you have any failure in terms of not whether it was a good or bad investment, but in the way you were treating them as customers?
I think I've learned a lot over 10 years, personally. I think that there are scenarios where, and by the way, I will preface this by saying we hate doing this, but in cases where we've had to bring in a CEO and, as a board member, I don't think I've done a good enough job giving the existing CEO or founder feedback. And I've changed my path on that. I think personally I'm a lot more upfront and open with the individuals, providing them feedback in real time, but with depth on, why I'm thinking the way I'm thinking. And not only that, but trying to surround them with people that can help them, that can make them better managers. Generally speaking, we don't need the leadership skills that entrepreneurs lack aren't around risk taking. It's not around idea generation. It's really around structure and building structure around an organization and building, deep benches in areas that they don't have experience in, specifically in sales and marketing as an example, where you're generally getting, you either get a CEO or a founder that's very strong in engineering and not strong in sales and marketing, or you get an entrepreneur, CEO who's very strong in sales and marketing and not very strong in engineering. right? It really is a tale of two cities. And so I think the key thing is, and in places where you asked very specific questions of where I think we failed our customers or I have failed my customers, that I try to bring in help and support and professional guidance sooner rather than later, because it's much, 10 years into this, it's much easier to identify weak spots than it was when I first started.
I love it. And now is the time to ask you to share your successes with us. So tell us a story of your greatest, most significant success as a result of the right customer focus or something you did right with your customer or anything else. Just what you consider as a great success.
We take at the fund a very team-based approach on investing. We take a very team-based approach on decision-making. For us, it's if you get one of us, you get all of us. And the reason I'm bringing that up is because I think that the biggest success is the fact that we've been able to raise four funds together as a team. And that, the continued support that we get from our investors and our customers on that side, and the confidence that they have in the investments that we're making and the decisions that we make that are sometimes hard financially and sometimes fantastic financially. But the balance between the two of those, I consider that to be, such a shining light in the success of us as a fund, and us continuously being able to raise this. And, the idea of having $600 million of assets under management to me is
definitely,
just an incredible amount of money. It's very humbling, to say the least.
I love it, because I wanted to tell you that it's such an humble approach, and I really love it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Can you recommend the best, most effective technological or digital tool that related to marketing or sales, or any other tool that you really use or really think is very effective for your companies?
So, it's interesting. Everybody uses different tools, obviously. And when we see one tool that we like, I tend to pick up the phone and call a few of other CEOs who I think it's relevant for and say, hey, guys, this company is using this. They think it's amazing. Pick up the phone and call them and ask them if they've had success with it. And that's the way, we build our viral channels around technology. And when I say that, we're building, our portfolio is so helpful with one another, that's a way that they are. So is there any one technology that I think is, out of this world that everyone is using? Like, there isn't just one. Everyone's using a different CRM tool. Not different, but, there's two or three that they're using.
Sure.
Everyone has very interesting, different ways of building top of funnel. So there isn't one that I would say sort of sticks out that says, oh, if you're a startup company, this is what you need to be using. Because I think that they're all, there's a time and a place for everything, and it's so easy to discover tools that it's worth the work investigating what fits into your marketing automation flow best, what fits into your sales automation flow best. But there is, I wish I had a great answer for you. I don't. But I can tell you.
Do you have any tool that really impacted you most?
Like recently, I would say I use so many different technologies. To ask me like which one, has elevated to the top and what I check very frequently, it's a matter of sort of, what the moment is. So as an example, and it's funny because Microsoft was considered for a long time a legacy organization. And I can tell you,
right,
I use OneNote now religiously, absolutely religiously. And I stopped using other tools that consolidate notes. I don't want to go out and name them, but I use, I use OneNote religiously. I've been using another, there's a company in Toronto. We're not an investor, called Nudge, as an example. It's really used in sales automation. It's supposed to tell you about your prospects and about your customers and where they've been mentioned and, you know, relevant articles to share with them. I use that. I use another company called A Company, which is based in Palo Alto, that also helps you, you know, prepare and get ready for your meetings and consolidates information on who you're meeting with and gives you kind of high level on them. I obviously, like everybody else, I pick apart the internet to learn about my prospects and the prospects before we actually have a call. And so I can prepare myself for those calls. You know, we here at the fund, we also use PitchBook very, very, very religiously, again, to do investigations on each of the companies that we're prospecting, on the competitive set. And then we have different tools that we've actually developed internally to use for prospecting as well. You know, we've started to use Slack a lot. We've sort of started to use Trello boards a lot. So there's, you know, a lot of different technologies that I'm using here. It changes on a day-to-day basis based on things that we're identifying and discovering. And we have actually somebody who works here, and one of her tasks is to actually look for new and interesting technologies and then kind of impose them upon us and make us use them and make it hard for us sometimes to you know, wean us off of what's not great anymore onto something new that is great. And she's done an amazing job of that.
That was a great answer. Yeah. You gave us so much to think about and to know and to discover. So it's great.
Took a while for me to get there. I'm sorry, but I got there.
It's great. Do you have or is there any service provider like a mentor or a consultant? It can also be a book that really affected you that might help others as well.
I've got a few that nothing comes, like I've not read anything recently that I think has impacted me. I did read a book, but geez, why the name is escaping me, I don't know, about prioritizing. And I thought the book was just out of this world. In fact, I read it in about, 4 hours, just flipped through it. Wow. It was that impactful. It might have been, look, I say 4 hours. It might have been eight. It was a couple of years ago that I read it, but it essentially talked about prioritizing really the three most important things for your week, your month, your quarter, your year, and figuring out how to basically not focus on anything that wasn't a priority. In other words, just find three things, deal with those three things, and everything else is far less of a priority. It's helped me in my personal life. It's helped me in my professional life. I will send you the link after this. It was really a tremendous book. I actually recommend it. I sent it to I can't believe I can't remember the name because I sent it to, four or five of my of the CEOs of boards that I'm sitting on.
I can't remember what I read last week, so it's okay. And we will put the link in our show notes so everybody can know what book it is. You know, there are many things that really affecting a success, but usually there's one thing that affects most. And I want to ask you, what is the one thing for you? What is your key success factor?
Oh, the one thing, if I had to boil it up, the one thing is my key success factor. I am a very relationship focused person. And so, for me, relationships are the guiding light for success, whether it is obviously in my personal life or in my professional life. I think that good relationships breed strong successes. It may not be the strongest financial success, as an example, although I think ultimately that it will lead to strong financial successes, and it has led to strong financial successes. But personal relationships, having meaningful understanding of the person that you're across the table from or having a cup of coffee with or who's at your house for dinner is the most important part of life and of breeding success.
And Before we say goodbye, I just want to ask you, what is the best way to contact you for anybody that want to be in contact with you or connect you?
Simple. It's alex@relayventures.com.
That's great. It will be in the show notes as well.
Sayud, I have the name of the book. I remembered it. It's called Essentialism. And it's
Essentialism.
It's available on Amazon, and it's by Greg McCowan, and it was it's an amazing read. Okay? It tells you how to prioritize life and tells you what to do with those things that aren't priorities and how to tell people they're not priorities nicely.
It sounds great, and I'm going to read it, and thank you so much. As I want to thank you, it has been a very, very interesting discussion. Thank you so much for being here.
It was a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, and bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And for you, our listeners, until the next time, it all goes down to this. You either reach or miss. Keep reaching your goals and vision. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Reach or Miss Show, the podcast for the customer-focused entrepreneur. You can find all the information, links, and resources that was mentioned at the show in our website, reachormiss.com. See you next week.